And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo! What's going on, y'all? How we doing? I'm on fire today, man. Let's jump right into this. I am on fire.
I could sense that from our discussions earlier today, and you're on fire because, well, a few reasons, but let's start with the, I guess, our first topic for the day.
Yeah, let's nurse it in.
Yeah, that the Venom reviews are starting to trickle in, and much kind of like we thought, they're not particularly good.
No.
It's still early, but I mean, at the point that it's at now, the last time I checked, which was, we're recording this actually on Wednesday night now, October 3rd. And so it's 2 days before the movie premieres, and it's at like 27% right now on Rotten Tomatoes.
Jeez, that's lower than it was when I checked it.
With an average, though, review somewhere between like 4.5 and 5.5 out of 10. So, you know, not strong reviews. A lot of criticisms about the tone of the movie and, you know, people finding some unintentional humor in it, which is not necessarily a great thing.
That's never a good thing.
No, but you never know. I mean, I know you didn't have particularly high hopes for this movie. I was holding out some hope because I liked the cast a lot, but I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about this movie. Three episodes, maybe four episodes. We've kind of hinted at this.
Yeah.
Look, it has all the good things that you'd want in a comic book, you know, movie. In a comic book movie, I'm not even gonna say franchise. It's got great actors. The material in terms of the character is a favorite. The director is you know, well known and has you know, been attached to some really, really good films. So, you know, all the good juju is going on there. And ultimately it's falling flat. And you know, I don't know, obviously the reviewers/critics have already seen the movie, so they are sort of confirming what I want to say what most people have thought, because I do think there's been an unfair narrative that's been tacked on to the film. But I will say that as a Marvel fan and you know, as a someone who's fairly familiar with the character in comic form, it you know, and again, we've talked about this, it is a very, very tough act to follow when you've got a Spider-Man who lives in the Universe A. And his, like, one of his, you know, A-list villains who lives in Universe B, and the two of them don't mix with each other. It's kind of hard to pull that off.
Yeah, although it doesn't sound like, that's a main issue here. Like, you still could have pulled off, like, a well-made movie, and I haven't seen it yet, obviously, and so I'm going to hold my judgment until I actually see the thing, but... just based on what I've read, it sounds like even the people who have had fun with it or enjoyed it are like, well, it's not a particularly good movie, but, you know, there's some fun stuff. And like I read and I listened to Mario's review on Revenge of the Fans, and, you know, he kind of had that feeling. It was like, well, you know, it's not a good movie, but, you know, there's some fun stuff. And if you're a fan of Tom Hardy and you're a fan of the Venom character, then, you know, check it out. So I'm seeing a lot of that. You know, when I read through the reviews, I look for some common threads.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be one of them. Like, the people are either, like, real negative on it, talking about, like, just poor filmmaking. And then you have the people who are somewhat positive about it, who are more like, well, it's fun.
Yeah, like they're middle of the road.
Yeah, like
And my comment before wasn't necessarily about the complaints from the reviewers. It's more about like people who would have been interested in this film, and you know, because, and I'm talking about just general fans. The folks know that Venom is, you know, intertwined with Spider-Man, and when it feels disconnected, it becomes less appealing, I think.
Sure.
I think one of the reasons why I'm fired up, and I was going to write a piece, decided, let's make this a conversation. because who knows where this will go, because I'm going to get real hot about it. One of the things that started coming through yesterday, and it probably had been going on well before that, but one of the things that really started to irk me were conversations from folks. Let me back it up before I even get there. What was happening on social media was that people were just blasting the film, right? And people saying, don't go see the movie, it's not worth your time, blah, blah, blah. Now, that's wrong. I think, you know, if you're going to state something like that, you should at least you shouldn't state it. You should just state why the film didn't jive for you, but always leave it open for people's interpretation, because art is subjective, right? What you might like or not like is something, it may be something that someone else likes or doesn't like, right? But what started to really piss me off, frankly, was people diverting or using the Venom commentary as a lightning rod to talk or point fingers at the MCU and saying, oh, it's MCU fans that are driving the negative comments around Venom because it's a non-MCU movie. Do you remember when this happened with BVS? Or, you know what I mean? Like, or do you remember when this happened with Justice League? And it was like, people started to attack one another about, oh, you know, it's just because, you know, Disney is out there with their bots and they're, you know, creating accounts to trash this movie. It's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, honestly, what the hell are you talking about? I haven't spoken to anybody who was an MCU fan and was like, oh yeah, we just can't have this movie exist because it's not in the MCU. No, that's not true. You know, do I think people would have gravitated more to a Venom film if it was in the MCU? Probably not because it's an MCU movie, but because it puts Venom, you know, front and center with his greatest foe, Spider-Man. I mean, if you know anything about the character, he, you know, his creation, his being is because of Spider-Man. So, you know, when you remove that, it just becomes there's a little bit less meat on the bone. That's not to say it was going to be a bad movie. That's not what I'm saying at all. But the fact that people are out there pointing fingers at the MCU, and this is the thing that ticks me off even more, is that I think, and what I was writing about, is that I've been sitting on the sidelines for some time. I'm both an MCU and a DC fan, right? And I've been open and honest that I've not been completely thrilled or excited about, you know, the previous take on some of the DC characters. I am a fan of the MCU. I you know, I'll take you back to 2008 when, you know, The Dark Knight was at its peak. Nolan's Dark Knight was at its peak and Iron Man was just getting started. And I remember reading comments about Favreau saying, oh, I needed to stay as far away from Batman as possible because he was going to eat up, you know, the box office. And that was true.
Yeah.
Right? It was absolutely true. So here we are 10 years later, and the MCU is what it is. By formula, probably. And by blueprint, absolutely, because they know what their audience is like. But to sit here and attack fans who are advocates and you know, who really enjoy these MCU films because they're cookie cutter or dumb films or whatever, like, who are you? So it doesn't vibe for you. Great. Go about your business. Move on. But to sit here and like try to change the narrative and go, oh yeah, it's Disney. It's like, no, that's not what's happening out there. You know, I honestly think that a lot of it is coming from envy. I think people feel bad that their characters have not hit the level of which MCU B characters have hit, right? MCU's become a multi-billion-dollar franchise by design. Okay. They figured out what worked for them. They replicated it. In some cases, it didn't work. They switched, they kind of changed gears, you know, they kind of took the feedback, and there's an approach that's working. You look at the movies from, you know, from the start of Iron Man. Those things didn't make much money. But you look at the MCU now, I mean, you have Ant-Man and the Wasp making, what, over $600 million worldwide? It's not the most well-performing box office MCU movie. It's done better than its first movie, but come on, you know, there's a success, and I think people are hating on that success, and I think people are envious of that success.
I know
you want to chime in here.
I actually think it's much deeper than that, right? So we're living in what I call the post-BVS society. BVS changed the game for social media interaction when it comes to movies, when it comes to sort of the hive mind mentality that we see now in this fandom. I mean, it exists in many other places. It exists in politics. It exists in sports, right, where it kind of was the original place. Everything now is my team versus your team. And we no longer have an exchange of ideas when it comes to anything anymore. We just have a collection of opinions and people sort of taking those opinions as fact. And to be fair, people arrogantly foregoing opinion and just stating things like, well, you shouldn't go see this movie, which is an arrogant thing to say, right? I mean, I don't know why anybody would ever say on, you know, don't go see this movie, especially someone in a position of influence and, you know, who's supposed to be, you know, a respected name. That shouldn't be happening. And it makes people look bad, and it feeds the beast that you're actually talking about right now, because it adds some weight to a narrative that is essentially a false narrative, right? This idea that there's a Disney bias and an MCU bias, it's all post-BVS garbage. Let's call it what it is. People were stung and surprised, shocked actually, myself included, when we saw the Rotten Tomatoes score for BVS. Because to be fair, Man of Steel, while it wasn't like critically acclaimed, it was not, you know, that low, right? It was not in the 20s. And BVS just, that was, you know, a very shocking thing. And people took that to heart, and it became the excuse for why that movie, while it did relatively well at the box office, was considered sort of an underperformer. That became the calling card. Instead of calling out the movie itself, people just wanted to say, oh, it was the critics, it was the quote-unquote bloggers, they were the reason why this movie wasn't successful. And it was a smear campaign, and it was a Disney thing, and an MCU thing, and then it became MCU versus DC. Where the narrative completely falls apart is when you start bringing up, well, the Nolan movies. You know, this whole idea of it's anti-DC and everything is pro-Disney. Well, those movies were critically acclaimed. And I've seen people say, well, anything in the end, all the movies other than MCU movies aren't going to get good reviews. Well, then, you know, Logan, Wonder Woman, you know, I mean, you could start tearing away at that narrative all you want. People tend to ignore all of that. And we're still talking about BVS because that's the thing. That was the thing that generated all of this. People, right. And also we need to be able to separate the idea that you can love a movie, and that doesn't mean that other people are going to,
right?
You know, and we, it also ties into the story that we, that also came out this week about like the Russian bots and The Last Jedi.
Right.
So two things. So I could see this coming a mile away when this, I was like, man, if these Venom reviews are not good, this is going to be the narrative. It's going to be, well, it's an anti-MCU or the MCU people, they're trying to push it because they want, you know, they want Sony to completely give all their characters over to Marvel, and they want everything to be Marvel, everything to be MCU.
Yeah.
You could just see it building. And we're even now regenerating talk of The Last Jedi. I'm seeing that all over the place now. God. Because people are saying, well, you know, I'm a human being, and I didn't like The Last Jedi. Yes, we get it. I know plenty of people, well, not plenty, I know a few people who are even big Star Wars fans that didn't like The Last Jedi for their own reasons. That's fine, but that doesn't mean that the narrative doesn't exist, that half of the people that were criticizing it were Russian bots. That's still a real thing. You could have disliked The Last Jedi as an actual human being, but still have to accept the fact that there was a legitimate campaign against that movie. So, you know, these, all of these things now go hand in hand, and it's like sometimes we're almost yelling into like the abyss, right, when we get into these debates and these arguments on Twitter, because you don't even know who you're talking to half the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why the exchange of ideas is so important, because we can, you know, sit there and talk about movies and things that we love, things that we dislike, have different opinions, but talk about it in a way where we're, you know, giving our thoughts, but, you know, to just come, there's no... The idea that Venom is doing poorly right now because of the MCU, they're Disney, and they're, everyone has a bias is kind of weird. I don't know why that's even a thing, but again, it's all just, it's post-BVS. That's the way we live now. Every movie that comes out that's a superhero movie or a comic book movie or anything like that, this is going to happen.
Right.
And unfortunately, the reviews get ignored if it's a well-received movie like Wonder Woman or like Logan. Right. But they get, we're having this debate now about Venom because of the you know, it's at 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. And somehow they ignore everything else.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I have no idea what what's going on out there in the fan, with the fandom, and you know, that's the thing. I mean, with these campaigns or you know, the commentary, I mean, people forget there are active boycotts for Marvel films, active boycotts in terms of like Black Panther rolled out, and there was a whole campaign about let's vote down Black Panther, and it's but why? What was all? Because it's like an FU to Marvel and FU to Disney.
Yeah, like, I think unfortunately that campaign was deeper than that.
Well,
sadder than that, actually. Yeah, but
and they did it with The Last Jedi, and they can, you know, there's,
and they claimed victory with Solo, which I've argued over and over again that the lack of success of Solo had nothing to do with that. It was about the marketing, and it was about the fact that it wasn't a movie that people felt that they needed to rush out to see, and it didn't resonate with audiences. It had nothing to do with planned boycotts or anything like that. The majority of the world that's not on Twitter, that's not part of like these fandoms like we are, don't know any of this is going on.
Right.
So, they're not being swayed one way or another by niche campaigns to boycott movies.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm going to need a drink. It's like, God, all of this stuff that's been happening, I'd say probably over the past couple of months, I'd say a little even before The Last Jedi, is just, it makes me so sad, because, you know, we got people out here making art, and again, it's all subjective, and we're not all going to like the same things, but like, how dare you point fingers at people? How dare you, you know, try to take that away from folks because they're having fun at the movies? You know, to sit here and classify folks is like, you know, when you say something about, oh, well, like, again, going back to this comment about Marvel films being like dumb or, you know, sort of seamsy, what does that say about the people who are in the audience watching it? Is that they're dumb? You know what I mean? Like, I just, and I know that that's not always implied. It's just, or that there's no weight behind these movies. And you know, it's their opinion. That's fine. I disagree and think otherwise, but you know, we should all be able to be civilized people and have healthy discussions over those things, those disagreements and perspectives, because it enlightens us.
Well, yeah.
And unfortunately, there are very few instances where we can have that dialogue.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, these are movies we're talking about.
Right, it's fiction. Come on.
And it's, like you said, it is art. And there's nothing wrong with loving something, even if other people don't. But again, it's so much of, I think, social media now has fed into this idea of like people looking for acceptance and to be part of that hive mind. And so they go on there, and now you wind up with these gangs or these groups or these, you know, whatever you want to call them, of people that's their thing. So they're going to be anti-DC. They're going to be anti-Marvel. They're going to be anti-Star Wars, Disney, whatever the case may be. And right. Or they're going to be pro-Marvel, pro-DC, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever part, whatever clique you're part of. And it's just become like I think it's almost predictable and boring now at this point, because it's like I said, you could see it coming a mile away. It's like, oh, well, you know, these people, there's going to be outrage over this now, and there's going to be outrage over that, and, you know, this is going to get blamed, and that's going to get blamed, and, you know, I don't know. We could just all go to the movies and enjoy them or dislike them, and say that, and it doesn't mean that we're a part of any grand conspiracy or anything like that. You know, we're just people going to the movies. And sometimes, you know, you have to be careful, because what starts out as just being like too cool for the room turns into nihilism. And I think that's a lot of what's happening right now. So what started out with like, well, I'm going to be like too cool and I'm not going to like the stuff that everybody else likes. But then that starts to, you cross over that line and you become nihilistic. And then everything is just like dark and negative and everything's a conspiracy. And that's, I think that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, man.
So
that was cathartic.
Yeah. So what else is going on? We had the I know you were on the latest Batman on Film podcast. You did one with Rick Hsu and Ryan Haas about Creed 2, right?
About the Creed 2 trailer. So first of all, quick shout out to those guys. True pros. Again, it was an incredible pleasure being on the Batman on Film podcast. For those of you that are listening to us, certainly check those guys out. They do have satellite shows, one dedicated to Rocky, one dedicated to Star Wars, and of course they are consistently talking about all things related to Batman. you know, we were reacting to the Creed 2 trailer, which I thought was absolutely amazing, and we just kind of broke it down and talked about where our thoughts were, you know, regarding the character of Adonis Johnson or Creed. And yeah, it was just, I don't know what you saw the trailer, right? What'd you think?
Yeah, I know. I love, I mean, I've been on board with this for a while. I will say that when I found out that like Sylvester Stallone was basically taking over the reins of this from Ryan Coogler, and that like he was bringing back, you know, Ivan Drago, and it was going to be this, I was like, I hope this isn't going to become like a cartoony thing. But yeah. I mean, I love the trailer. I love the posters. I love everything I'm seeing from this thing, and I'm pretty pumped up about it.
Yeah, and you know, we got some really interesting images and shots from the film. Love that stare down between Rocky and Ivan Drago.
Yeah,
very reminiscent of Rocky IV, which I know, you know, for some reason gets a lot of hate because it's so cartoony, I guess. Very over the top. You like what I did there?
Yeah, I see that. Well done.
But I love it. I do. I really.
Well,
I mean,
Rocky IV is, it's one of the most 80s movies ever made, right?
Right.
I mean, everything about that movie, the DNA of that movie is the 80s, right? Cold War, America, U.S. versus Russia, this whole idea that, like, their athletes were all on steroids and ours were, you know, chopping wood and, you know, running and doing it the real way, right? That was like the whole mentality that we had. And it's very patriotic. And I mean, it ends with the crowd in Russia chanting his name, right? So, I mean, it's just, and he, you know, all the red, white, and blue and everything. And of course, the just amazing 80s soundtrack. So it's a very 80s movie. So I could see how maybe now, all these years later, someone watching that for the first time may, without some of that context, may be like, well, this is just kind of a cartoon, like, you know, superhero movie almost, where the good guy wins in the end and beats the evil villain. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy all of the Rocky movies. I don't love five, and probably never will. What's that?
I said I have never met a person that.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that loves
Rocky
it. And I never will love it. But it's you know, I'm pretty much a fan of the whole franchise. I mean, even, you know, Rocky III, even when you think about it, has elements of, you know, almost bordering on cartoon like too at points. Yeah. The whole thing with Thunderlips with Hulk Hogan and all of that stuff. But
yeah,
you know, so it was. I mean, you know, there were moments like that, but yeah, this now Creed 2 though is, and I'm starting to see a lot of buzz for it.
Oh, people are losing their,
you know,
minds,
much more so
right
than for the first one, which kind of was a sleeper because I don't think people really knew what to expect from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was so well received, and it's such a good movie that I think now people are completely pumped up for the idea of the sequel. And, you know, you're going to have people from, like, our generation that are going to be nostalgic about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I hear people talking to me about this just because they're like, oh, I hear that, you know, Drago's back.
Right.
You know, and so that's going to be an element. So you're going to get the fans who went to see Creed. You're going to get also some old time fans that are, you know, nostalgic. And I think this thing's going to be pretty big.
Yeah, I agree. And it's coming out in Thanksgiving weekend. So great time for it to be there. Some of the at least from the threads I can pull from the trailer in terms of story, it looks, you know, really deep, hard hitting, very much like the first movie. I'm super looking forward to it. I mean, the idea of what happens to the villain after the hero beats him. It kind of reminds me of Cobra Kai in a way. So it's right. You know, we don't know, you know, what happened to Ivan Drago, and I'm sure we're gonna get a taste of that.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see the direction that they go with this, because it very easily could have been hokey.
Yeah, yeah, and but it doesn't seem that way.
No, it doesn't, and that's what kind of has me excited. So it is gonna be interesting to see what the actual plot of this is, besides just the general bullet points that we know what the nuances are involved in it. So count us in for that.
For sure. For sure. So speaking of Sylvester Stallone, yeah. I have to laugh at this. I don't even know if it's meant to be funny, but we got our first picture of Rambo in Rambo 5.
We did.
And hot dog! Is it an amazing photo?
At least I think it was Rambo.
Yeah, I don't.
They
I don't
told
know
me
who
it was
is.
Rambo anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's Cowboy Bill.
If you haven't seen it, it's basically Cowboy John Rambo. There's really no other way to describe it, you know. I'm just going to leave it at that, because, like I said, I don't get too caught up in pictures and things like that without any context. But it is interesting. It was a little jarring. Not quite what I was expecting, but, you know, let's see.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I thought it was. Are we doing Toy Story, a live action version of Toy Story? Is that what?
Oh God, I hope not. I mean, I love Toy Story, but I don't know
that
I need
that.
That
is. I'll reserve judgment till we see more. It's a little off. It's a little out there from what we're used to. I'm trying to think. So Rambo 1, World War II. He's a Vietnam vet, so he's, you know,
and he's
sort of
kind of the villain in it, right?
Yeah, for sure. Rambo 2, he's out building a church in Thailand, I guess, and he's all juiced up. Rambo 3, same concept. Rambo, yeah. He's like some sweaty boat captain.
Yes.
Right. And now he's kind of retired and he's cattleman. Great.
Yeah.
You're on a farm, man. Like, but the thing is, I think that was always meant to be his story, though. If I remember, like the first Blood, when he gets back, wasn't he supposed to meet up with a friend? Who died, and that guy had a farm or something like that?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, you know, okay. They're tying it in. I don't know that I needed to necessarily see the story of him working on the farm, but who knows? Again, I mean, we're kind of joking with this, but it's, you know, without the context and without any plot points or anything, it was a picture, and it got people talking, so that's ultimately the desired result, right, of doing something like that. So,
for sure,
you know. Good for them.
Yeah.
And I'll watch it. Regardless. So.
And because it's a Rambo movie.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
I may not run out to the theater, but I will be watching it at some point.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So we've got that to look forward to.
Yes.
okay.
You happened to check out DC Universe finally, right?
I did.
After we talked about it on
the
show.
Yeah. So, okay. I really enjoy the content. I like kind of going through history and the vault, so to speak. I got to say, though, from a tech perspective, I'm not really blown away by the interface. And I had a conversation with Justin Kowalski and Ryan Haas about that again from Batman on Film. I think, you know, that'll likely get better. They just probably wanted to get something out there.
So which interface, what are you actually using it on?
I'm using Apple TV.
Okay.
So it's an app.
Because I use it on...
I know a lot of people use it on their phones and on their computers.
I use it on Roku, and I've had no issues with it. It's not the sickest interface I've ever seen, but no, I mean, I haven't, you know, in the few days that I've used it, I haven't noticed anything that really jumped out at me. On the phone, it actually is pretty smooth. The couple times I've tried it there. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, when it comes to these things, the one thing about these streaming services, as much as we love them, is the fact that they are device dependent, you know,
right.
So depending on how you're using it and, you know, what type of, you know, is it Apple TV? Is it an iPad? Is it a, you know, a Roku? Is it whatever? I mean, that can change your experience a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, it ultimately comes down to the content. And
yeah,
you seem to be enjoying that. So
yeah, so it's, you know, so far so good. I was going back through the Fleischer Superman series. I did start tuning into some of the comics, kind of flipping through that. Watched Batman, you know, so I'm just kind of like poking around and revisiting some things. Again, you know, the interface itself, just the way that the content is presented, is not my favorite. Kind of reminds me of the WWE app, WWE Network. It's just like splash of content, and you kind of just quickly scroll through. Things aren't really presented well, but you know, ultimately, I'm sure that'll change. Yeah. And yeah, and then Titans drops, right? Titans is right around the corner.
Yep, I'm starting to see more and more of that.
Yeah, you know, small, you know, lots of trailers and things rolling out. We got our second full trailer on that, and it was interesting because it is being released on Netflix internationally.
Well, yeah, so that's the new thing. So it's not, that is not, I did see people reacting to that. Now, that is not uncommon, so
Right. There's
already been a precedent set with that, with CBS All Access, where Star Trek Discovery, which is exclusive to CBS All Access in the United States, and maybe North America, I'm not sure, but definitely in the United States, is on Netflix everywhere else. And that caused a lot of controversy when it was first announced, because people were like, well, wait a minute, how come everybody else gets to get this show with their regular Netflix subscription, and we have to pay an extra, you know, $6 a month for the show? And it caused it was a whole big issue. Now, I haven't heard too many people complaining about this yet, but it was just announced. So this is the one thing, because, you know, these shows have to make money.
Right.
You know, I know that Star Trek Discovery made back a significant portion of its budget and was able to put more money into the show because of the guaranteed money it was getting from its Netflix deal overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how these things work sometimes. You know, they don't know exactly how many subscribers they're going to get. They have projections and hopes, but, you know, they need money up front to make these shows, right? And to support the programming and to support the service. So that upfront money, you know, some of it comes from their own pocket, but some of it's also coming from these other deals, these international deals, which is where they really make their money. And ultimately, the redistribution of these original shows, which is why original content is so important and so valuable, is what's going to become the cash cow.
Right. Yeah. I certainly hope people don't lose their minds over it. Yeah, I'm sure people are going to have the knee jerk. Well, some folks, I'm paying for this. Why is it going to be on Netflix? It's like, well, you're not in international markets. So pump the brakes there. And of, you know, at some point, I'm sure that they'll strike a deal, and it may even get released on other networks after it's run. It's sort of run its course on the DC universe. So who knows what kind of deals.
And people also have to realize too, like, you know, overseas things like streaming services are still very, very niche. I mean, they're niche here too, but they're very niche too overseas and, you know, other markets. So You know, I don't know that it would be in their best interest to try to launch. I mean, even like something like WWE Network took them a while to roll out to like multiple other countries. And right. they're doing like a slow, they did a slow rollout around the mm-hmm. world. It's just TV viewing habits and stuff are different.
Right.
So,
and rights as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So they, mm-hmm. you know, there's reasons why they do that stuff. And obviously finances are the primary reason, but you know, it's a smart thing, but it's a good thing at the end of the day, because we get to have the content. And that's what's key. So, you know, hopefully people embrace it if they like it. And we haven't seen Titans yet, so we don't know if we're going to like it or not. But
mm-hmm.
having creator-driven, creator-owned content pumping out is never a bad thing, I don't think.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Agreed. Cool. All right. So is there any... Oh, wait, there was other one other news bit, and that kind of is a nice segue from this Netflix talk, and that is that Netflix today announced that they will be doing a sort of long-form series of the Chronicles of Narnia books or stories, which will also sort of be running parallel to another cinematic reboot of those stories, and they will I guess to some extent be connected with one another, so that's kind of a first to a degree, because I think Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. attempted this and they were vaguely successful, I mean, with the whole fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. as we've talked many many times, but this is the first time where I think they're kind of creating content for both simultaneously. And I think the idea is that they will cut in and out of each other. So,
yeah, I guess let's see if this grand vision actually sees the light of day. You know, when I was a kid, a little kid, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was one of my favorite books. And I didn't really love any of the other ones.
Right.
To be honest with you, I kind of just lost interest somewhere along the way.
Mm.
So, but I mean, I loved The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I have not seen any of those movies. I mean, obviously, I was much older when the movies finally came out,
right.
So I wasn't really in the target demo, but they didn't really set the world on fire. I mean, the first one, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe did well, but after that, I mean, it really, and they kind of stopped making them. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the interest level is for that, and it's hard to really see where they're going with it, because, you know, they're calling, oh, it's going to be the Narnia, because, of course, everything's got to be a universe now.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. I'm not overly excited about the idea of it, although if they pull it off, it could open the floodgates up for other types of things like that.
Yeah.
So maybe, it, you know, it's something to root for. I hope that they can do it and do well with it, because I think it's a nice model and it would be a fun model for other, you know, other things to try. This just wouldn't be the chosen subject matter for my personal tastes now.
Right. Right. It's interesting. I mean, I guess, you know, kids content on Netflix is probably up on the rise. I've noticed a lot of it these days.
Sure.
And, you know, they're getting to bring back some of the older stuff that kids would have been familiar with, like, you know, Magic School Bus, right? That was a thing that just came back.
Right.
So, you know, the idea of it weaving in and out of both streaming and cinematic mediums is an interesting take. You know, I'll say that I am I have seen the three films.
Yes.
They were okay. Agreed. I like the first one. First one was definitely the best. But who knows? I mean, I also watched the series of unfortunate events, the Neil Patrick Harris series, and I enjoyed that. So if it's anything like that, I'm sure it'll be successful. But, you know, time will tell. So we'll see.
Yeah. It is a grand vision, though. So good luck with it.
Good for them.
Yeah. So let's get into some questions, because we have a bunch, and I have a feeling some of them are going to not be the shortest answers ever. So we're going to start with JRB. He says, what's your most rewatchable movie, a movie you can put on any time and not lose focus or want to play on your phone? His is Nacho Libre. And I'm actually glad he said that, not because mine is Nacho Libre, but because mine is a movie that I don't think most people would expect my answer to be, because it's not really like a kind of a geeky fanboy superhero, whatever type of movie, sci-fi movie. Believe it or not, the movie that I find myself rewatching over and over and over again over the last, like, I don't know, well, since it came out, basically, is The 40-Year-Old Virgin. I watch that movie,
that's a great movie,
every time it's on. I've actually watched it multiple times in a day because, oh, you know, sometimes they just run it. Like, it seems like it's on every day, apparently,
right,
for whatever reason. But that movie, I'm sure there's others, but that one sticks out to me. Like, I will stop everything I'm doing and be a very happy person if that thing comes on television. Even though I own it, I don't need it to come on television, but I'm very happy when it does, and I watch it every time.
That's cool. That's a good one. You know, it's a kind of like, is that a Judd Apatow movie?
Yeah, that was the, it that is, was right? His first, that was the one that launched that whole.
Yeah.
Kind of,
it's freaking brilliant. Yeah. So funny. I have a lot in common with him.
With Judd Apatow? The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Oh, okay.
It has nothing to do with my virginity.
Is it you play the tuba in your living room? Is that what it is?
Yeah. It's been, I was kicked in, I kicked some girl in the nose.
Got it.
No. Kidding. Okay, so moving on. Mine is also not a comic book movie or fanboy type sci-fi movie. It's actually A Bronx Tale.
Okay.
I love that movie. My parents and I'm originally from the Bronx, so there's a personal connection there, only because it's the Bronx. Nothing else. I just enjoyed that movie. I thought it was always intriguing to watch, and as I've gotten older, it becomes even more intriguing to watch. The acting is phenomenal. It's a great De Niro film, a great Chaz Palminteri film. I did have the pleasure at some point, maybe a couple of years ago, of seeing Bronx Tale on Broadway. Not a Broadway show. It was a monologue done by Chaz Palminteri himself, walking you through the story.
I was going to ask you if you had seen that.
Yeah. So it's that was phenomenal. It's probably one of the best things I've ever seen on Broadway. Anytime that movie's on, I will get the itch too to just throw it on because I own it, and I'll watch it from start to finish. I don't care what the hell I'm doing.
Cool.
Like, if that movie's on TV, I'll forget it. Productivity zero. So
yeah. So cool. Ron Diesel, he says, as it relates to the whole thing with Zack Snyder wanting to kill Batman, which we knew months ago, given he killed off Jimmy Olsen in Superman and was going to bring him back in Justice League movie, what's your first reaction, and do we think they should reboot the entire universe? So this was the big thing that came out over the last week that, Zack Snyder, who now can't stop talking about his plans for his movies, that he was going to have this 5-movie arc that was going to lead to the death of Batman. I don't really know. It's so hard to talk about like hypotheticals because it didn't become a reality, right? So, you know, without knowing what the true vision was going to be and what the whole arc was going to be, I can't really say one way or another whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, because we didn't even come close to getting there. And I, you know, so it's hard to say. I mean, I don't think that you can't kill Batman. I've seen people say, oh, that would have been dumb because you can't, you know, you can kill anybody in theory. And if it's done well, you know, great. I don't know that 5 movies is necessarily something you need to build to have the type of impact that it should have. But you know, it's just, it's so hard to even have a thought on it because we just don't know what the circumstances were going to be, what Batman's full arc or Bruce Wayne's full arc was going to be in this thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, did you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm not necessarily surprised by that, by his, you know, his willingness to kill off the character. And,
sure. And he was setting that up as, you know, he was setting up what seemed like a Greek tragedy almost, right? Like the way he was structuring that whole thing.
It's an older Batman. At some point, his run has to end, right? So, sure. I get it. But yeah, to your point, I mean, it's just speculating on things that could have been that aren't anymore. So, you know, who knows what his grand finale would have been, you know, at the end of all of this, if Flashpoint would have somehow recorrected the timeline and you end up with, I don't know, different characters or whatever. I mean, that seemed to be the direction he was going, and hence the appearance of the Flash in BVS. So yeah, I mean, great. I just kind of wish he'd stop talking about it, because it just adds fuel to the fire of people, like, you know, clamoring about this and that and whatever. Like, let's all move on. I mean, DC is clearly, Warner Brothers is clearly moving on from you know, the path that he, you know, put the franchise on. So,
yeah.
But,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, if he wants to talk about it and talk about what his plans were, considering he didn't get it seen all the way through, I mean, the fact that people then go and run with, I mean, I guess that's maybe fine. At this point he should know better because of how, you know, people react to just his very name these days, one way or another, negative or positive. His name elicits a major reaction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess I can understand as a creator why you would want to.
Sure, but I mean, you look at Edgar Wright, right? Like, he was working through his film. And
somewhat different, though. I mean, he didn't get to even make his movie, in theory.
But I mean, think about all the years he spent, probably way more than Zack Snyder spent working on his film, Edgar Wright, right? So I think there'd be a bit more of a...
Well, he took the high road,
He took the high road. I mean, Lord and Miller. You know, it's like, say what you got to say and then, like, come on, move on.
Yeah.
But, you know, just continue to spin this thing out of control. Speculation, all this other stuff. All right, fine.
As for the now, the second part of the question was, should they reboot the entire universe? So I guess it depends on what that means. So if that means we're losing Wonder Woman and we're losing, you know, Aquaman and we're losing some of the positive things, then I would say no. I don't think they need to necessarily reboot the entire universe. I like the idea of, I think as we discussed, I don't know if it was last episode or the episode before, the idea of, you know, let's focus on our strong points. Wonder Woman is a very strong point, right? Aquaman hopefully will be a strong point. You know, we don't know yet, but focus on those. Make them more standalone. It doesn't mean you have to ignore anything that happened, but I don't know that there is a true universe at this point. Like, that's the thing that's still up in the air. So... if rebooting the universe means we're getting a new Wonder Woman, I don't initially want that. I didn't even want a new Superman. I just wanted Henry Cavill to get his Superman sequel.
Right.
So, I don't necessarily think they need to reboot it, but at some point, I think they will eventually get far enough away from this era that it's just going to naturally happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's sort of what they're building towards.
I think they're already rebooting it, to be honest with you. I've kind of talked about this a little bit on Twitter, but I just think it's been a slow and controlled explosion, which is creating opportunities for, you know, rebooting what we think is a universe, because ultimately the vast majority of the films that we're getting are all period pieces. So there is really no opportunity for interconnectivity. you know, Wonder Woman is a period piece. Who knows where Aquaman sits in that? The only film that we know takes place at some point after the appearance of Superman is Shazam. And again, as we've talked a couple of times here, that might be completely wiped out.
Right.
Joker film has been said totally disconnected.
Yes.
And it's also a period piece, so it's even twice removed.
Right.
And
the, you know, the Matt Reeves Batman, whether it's connected or not, it's definitely taking place at a, like, it's a prequel at the, at,
right,
you know, even if it is connected, it's a prequel, which it probably isn't going to be connected because it's a young Bruce Wayne, but, you know, it's definitely not a direct tie-in. Let's put it that way.
Right. So, you know, at this point, what we thought was a, you know, again, a connected universe with all these characters living and breathing among one another at the moment in terms of what we're getting in the near term is not that. So it has been a completely rebooted expectation of what we, you know, hope to see on you know, in cinemas and in theaters.
The nice thing is, though, and hopefully DC can, or Warner Brothers could capitalize on this, is the fact that people just cannot talk enough about these movies.
Yeah.
And it would be great if they could just seize on that and just kind of bring it home, because people desperately do want these movies to be great and to succeed. Because, I mean, you and I both were always bigger DC fans than Marvel fans before that label became a thing. Right. Like when we didn't think about it. So like people want these movies and they want them to be great. And we're talking about them endlessly. Now the movies just have to match the conversation. So.
Right. Right. And, you know, hoping that, you know, come December and even soon, because, you know, a Aquaman trailer is certainly on the horizon. You know, we get our first taste on their pivot.
Yeah. So. By the way, we didn't even talk about it because you just reminded me, speaking of December. So Alita Battle Angel has moved off of that December 21st date. And not only did it just move, but like a whole, it rocked a whole foundation of a lot of things going on at Fox.
Totally.
Because they didn't just move it up a couple of weeks, or move it back a couple. They just moved it to Valentine's Day weekend of next year, which just so happened to be the weekend that Dark Phoenix was supposed to come out. And the day after they released the Dark Phoenix trailer and poster, they moved Dark Phoenix from that February weekend to June and put Alita in the February spot, and then put a PG-13 cut of Deadpool 2 on that December 21st date with Aquaman and Bumblebee and Mary Poppins Returns. If you didn't think it was interesting enough already, it's even more interesting now. The amount of things that happened in that announcement were just mind-boggling.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things about that. I won't touch the December thing yet. The fact that they moved Dark Phoenix to June is interesting for me, to me, because, well, in May is Star Wars Episode 9, right?
Yep.
So there's going to be a lot. I mean, hopefully they've put enough distance, enough of a buffer to kind of steal some box office dollars there, but That's a tricky spot, regardless of how far they've put it in June, because I expect Star Wars Episode 9 to pretty much block out the sun.
Well, and don't forget Avengers.
Oh yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, wow. Totally forgot about that. Is that a June?
May 3rd, I believe.
Wow. Wait, when is Star Wars? It is 19, right?
Episode.
I think it's probably May something.
It's no, December 20th.
Oh, they moved it to December? Oh, yes. It was always December. I don't know why I'm so stupid.
Wow, it's be so hard on yourself.
I don't know. I don't. Well, I just for some reason I thought May, but I'm wrong.
Well, either way, there's a gigantic movie coming out in May that's going to eclipse a lot of things, whether it's Star Wars or Avengers.
Or Avengers, yeah. There's going to be something. So, so I misspoke there. But anyways, so there's that. So they're going to be competing with Avengers, the last Avengers movie. This move of, I don't even care about Alita, so I'm not even going to talk about that. But this move of Deadpool, PG-13 Deadpool, in that December 21st time, you know, date is like bananas to me. I don't necessarily know why they did it. I'm sure it's obviously just to make more money, and I don't think they're trying to make a run for not for Oscars. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
I
have no idea why they did that. I have no idea,
it's interesting. So I'm assuming they realized that it made no sense to have Alita come out on that date, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now what I do find interesting is the fact that rather than move it up a couple of weeks, they decided to basically shift their whole schedule, which I don't know what that says about Dark Phoenix, because after, like I said, you do it the day after you release the trailer. Very interesting. But,
right.
You know, Deadpool has always been presented as like the snarky sort of middle finger to the whole like superhero movie genre.
Right.
So what is a bigger middle finger than take? Not that it's going to, I mean, I don't think Deadpool 2 PG-13 is going to really make a difference at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably just did it to just throw it in there to say, hey, you know, look what we're doing. Here's another middle finger. This is such a Deadpool-like move. And if it makes a couple of extra bucks, it makes a couple of extra bucks and right. You know, whatever.
Do you think that they will? So obviously they're cleaning it up, right? But do you think they're going to add anything extra?
I don't know. I mean, until like a week ago, I didn't even know it was a thing.
I mean, what?
So it's hard to really.
I'm just like, holy cow. And yeah. So now you've got Aquaman, you've got Deadpool, and you've got Bumblebee all competing for, you know, the same sort of audiences and dollars as one another. I still think, you know, Mary Poppins has taken this to the bank, like for sure, because those three movies are just going to steal market share from one another.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't even know how wide this Deadpool release thing is going to be either.
Right.
You know.
Right. But people love themselves some Deadpool, you know. I'm sure there will be lots of repeat viewers. People who had seen the R version are going to come back for the PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, unless they were, you know, it's something that they were toying around with, and unless it was something that they were toying with, and they were like, hey, you know, we're already working on a cut like this for whatever reason. And they're like, you know what? We're going to move Alita. We got an open spot on that date. Let's just throw it in theaters and see what happens.
Wow. I don't know. I have no words.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's big balls, man.
Yeah.
Big balls. So it's going to be, it just got that much more interesting. And we, you know, that dollar bet still out there. So, you know. I'm betting. I'm going all in on Miss Poppins. Crush that.
So, speaking of crushing it, so Nathan Odinson, who I think every week makes me think more about movies that I've seen than probably anybody, he had two questions. One, we're going to dig into. So, I'm going to start with the second question first. He said, best unpopular opinion, a movie or franchise that you absolutely love that the masses normally crap on?
I'm still racking my brain up. before we hit the record button, we were talking about this.
Yeah, we tried to prepare for this, and it's this is a tough one.
So hard. I can't. I'm struggling. I'm really, really struggling. I want to give a good answer too. RoboCop 2.
Well, you've said that. I mean, see, that's the thing. So, I mean, I have plenty of guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
Right? I watched the Masters of the Universe movie with Dolph Lundgren. Basically tons of 80s movies, right?
Right.
Like, you know, Just One of the Guys, like stuff like that,
One of the Guys, that's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. So it's hard to really say. I mean, as far as franchises go, I was trying to think of one franchise that, like, people just hate that I was like, yeah, you know, I enjoy those, and I really couldn't think of one. That was tough. So most of mine are going to be mainly just guilty pleasures, you know, like, you know, the later Police Academy movies or, you know, things like that than right. they are anything else. Like, it's not going to be something like Transformers where, you know, because I haven't seen anything but the first one where they weren't critically acclaimed and people tend to not like them. But,
right.
you know, and then
I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I'm absolutely in love with them. It's because I had nothing better to do with my time. I mean, let me think about that. I saw the first one in the theaters. I don't remember the second one at all. Or third. Yeah, that, no. Those don't. I mean, Revenge of the Nerds, maybe? Do people...
No, but I think the first one people like
for
classic, the most part.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that... people celebrate the entire series.
Like Caddyshack.
Well, that's a classic, though. Caddyshack.
Yeah, but the first one. But and
the second one's a disaster.
Really like the second one.
Why, but did
I,
you?
Yeah, but I like the second
do
one.
Do you really?
I do. I
so
like
let
the
me get this straight. You like Caddyshack too, but you've never seen Office Space?
Yep.
Yeah, but this is, we got to talk about that.
Yeah. God, Ghostbusters. Do people like Ghostbusters too? I do.
I didn't hate Ghostbusters 2. It's not as revered, obviously.
Right.
But I can't really say I go out of my way to watch it. But, yeah.
I mean, I genuinely like Ghostbusters 2. I think Ghostbusters 2 is a good movie.
Huh. Okay.
But again,
it's
I think part of it too is just like nostalgia for me. I grew up watching that film. And so you're like, yeah, all right, I can deal with it. But I'm not really 100% on it.
And speaking of nostalgia, so his first question, which we've saved for last, for obvious reasons, as you're about to hear, was what is your opinion on the Star Wars prequels as a whole, meaning judging the story as a whole over the three films? So I know Aaron has nothing to say about this topic, so I'll start. Forget the whole for a second. Just break it down. I'm one of those people who, when I went to see The Phantom Menace in theaters, I was so pumped up that I was going to the movie theater to see a new Star Wars movie that, like, my feet didn't hit the floor for, like, a day after I saw that movie. And it wasn't until I rewatched it when it came out on DVD that I was like, wow, I didn't like that as much as I thought I did. But if I'm looking at and I don't like Attack of the Clones... mainly because I just feel that Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman together bring that movie to a grinding halt. And Revenge of the Sith is a good movie. But as a whole is actually where I have my biggest issues with the prequels. Because I feel like its ultimate failure was that story, the structure and the story that they chose to tell. Like, if you would tell me that we're going to get a prequel trilogy where they're going to tell me the story of how Anakin Skywalker betrays the Jedi and becomes Darth Vader, and it's going to involve the Clone Wars, I'm like, I'm in. That's a slam dunk. How is that going to be bad? But the story that we were always kind of envisioned, right, when based on... you know, Obi-Wan's conversation with Luke talking about how, you know, Anakin was already a great pilot when he met him and how they fought in the Clone Wars and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, because of the Anakin that we saw at the end, the original one at the end of the Return of the Jedi, you know, we always envisioned them to be older, right? And kind of more developed by the time they meet. And we never
right.
got that story. We got a little Anakin. You know, Jake
right.
Lloyd. And I just found that if you look at those three movies as a whole, that journey of Anakin Skywalker just doesn't work for me. And part of it was casting, a big part of it, but just the narrative structure itself, like, they don't really it's not the Clone Wars. They kind of dance around the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars are sort of a subplot kind of in the background. Whatever the heck was going on in the Phantom Menace was a thing. Mm-hmm. And then they do bring it home as best as they could in Revenge of the Sith. But I just feel like everything that came before that just failed for me. And I think that Revenge of the Sith would have had even more weight had the story itself been, we didn't start with a little kid, Anakin Skywalker, and then jump in the very next movie to him being Hayden Christensen.
Right, right. Deep breath. Here we go. We're talking Star Wars prequels. So similar reaction. I remember going to the theater, watching The Phantom Menace, and going, oh my God, like all types of high coming out of it, and got the VHS, watched it. And I mean, by this time I was in college, so it was like VHS and then, you know, DVD, whatever. And I watched it again, and I started noticing that I was like fast forwarding through certain parts. And that's when I realized, I'm not really a big fan of this. I just want to get through. And then, you know, then as you get older and you watch it again, you're like, yeah, there's a whole mess of stuff happening here that just doesn't really make any sense. By the time I got to see the Clone Wars, in theaters, I agree that the connection or sort of chemistry between Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman is just unbelievable. And like probably, and Natalie Portman is an amazing actress.
Yes.
But I felt like, you know, she phoned it in. There's a whole litany of issues with that film. Some of the decisions in Attack of the Clones, specifically with Yoda, just irked me the moment I saw them on the screen in the theater. It is to me the weakest of all of the Star Wars films. And I agree, sort of moving on to Revenge of the Sith, that is probably it is the most superior of the prequel films. Although it does still, in my opinion, have some glaring issues. And I agree. I think had we have just started with maybe a teenage or even early 20s Anakin Skywalker, there was a lot that could have been unpacked there. And I think we got glimpses of that. I never really bought into this idea of Anakin being this, you know, incredibly angry or angst ridden person,
right,
that ultimately becomes becomes Darth Vader. There was still so much good things happening around this guy that I don't necessarily think the story was as tight. The overall story was as tight as it should have been.
And the jealous factor too was kind of not, I never thought of, you know, Anakin was like ultimately like jealousy and insecurity were going to be the things that led him to become Darth Vader.
Right. Right. You know, there's a lot that happens to him and I think one of the brighter spots does actually happen in Attack of the Clones, and that's it's actually when he loses his mother, because you can see that there was quite a connection there, and his,
sure,
you know, he says it in the first when he would come back, he was going to come back for his mother and free her and all of that stuff. And then when he finally does get a chance to get back there, she's been taken away and is probably a Tusken sex slave. And then she dies. And then you see that flip from I'm hurting, and so I want others to hurt. I love that scene. Like that's probably one of the best, in my opinion, you know, best scenes in Star Wars, is watching Hayden Christensen kind of deal with that. And then you automatically see him flip over from grief to anger. And then they cut it off and they don't show us how he kills everybody. Like, I'm like, that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see that epic, like Rogue One type scene in Attack of the Clones. You know, we don't get that. And then he goes back to just being like this moany sand. It gets everywhere. It's coarse. Like, shut up, bro. Drown in the sand. Go away. Go find some fleas. Just disappear, man. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that I just didn't really it didn't vibe with me. And again, as I've rewatched them, I can appreciate them because they're Star Wars films. But ultimately, from what we've gotten, I would rather not even have them.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. I rarely rewatch them. And I just feel like I kind of ignore them, now. Because I just, had we gotten, if that prequel trilogy was the Clone Wars, and that was the focus of them, and we got an Anakin and an Obi-Wan that were somewhat closer in age, and we got to see him be this kind of hotshot, hot-headed pilot, great pilot, right, who was too cocky for his own good, but wasn't as conflicted, but it was ultimately like his cockiness and that hotshot mentality that caused him to slip to the dark side. I think it would have made the story better. I think it would have been more tragic in the end when he does finally become Darth Vader, because it's a tragedy, right? The prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to feel that, like when he's like, oh man, even though I know this is coming, like it should have been like just heart-wrenching when he becomes Darth Vader. And I never fully felt that. And had the relationship. See, the other thing too, I think that didn't work for me from a, you know, story wise as a whole, was the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, which is supposed to be a central part of that, and such mm-hmm. a huge part of you know, him becoming Darth Vader. Like, he's a little kid when you first meet him, so there's not a bond there, right? Then they're not really together much in Attack of the Clones. And then, or Revenge. So it's like you almost had to, like, they wanted you to sort of fill in the blanks. And you were supposed to just accept the fact that these people had become best buds.
Mm-hmm.
And we just never really felt that. So, you know, the whole Chosen One thing I could have did without. I would have preferred if it was centered around the Clone Wars and they were just fighting together. And like I said, it was cockiness and kind of arrogance that ultimately led him to fall. And he got to the point of no return, and that was the tragedy of it all. And we got to see this great bond and these two great heroes fighting together, these great Jedi. That's the story that I always hoped we would get, and we didn't really get anything close to that. And I think it's probably why I enjoy, like, the Clone Wars, the show, more than the prequels themselves. Mm-hmm. Because at least there you got some development. You got to see them together. You got to see a little bit of, you know... you got to see the Clone Wars themselves. And so I will always watch the Clone Wars more than I will watch the prequel trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. The Clone Wars series is just phenomenal to me. And you get a little bit more, but we talked about this. A lot of people don't watch or read or sort of immerse themselves in the other Star Wars content or mediums, right? So not the TV shows or the cartoons or the books and all of that stuff. So, you know, a lot of that context is sort of, you know, is painted in those other bits of content. And if you're not there, you're not going to pick up on it. Or if you're not watching, you're not going to pick up on it. So it's just a shame, because I think a lot of it was kind of driven home in those kind of TV shows and in books, and for folks that are just solely watching the movies, they're just not going to have that experience. So,
yes,
yeah.
So I think that's it for today, right? For this week.
Yeah. God, we got through this one. Feels like it was quick.
Yeah.
But probably wasn't.
We got and of course, if you're listening to this on the Thursday that it drops, of course tomorrow is going to be the first day that we will be at New York Comic Con. We're going to be there Friday, October 5th, promoting the Fanboy Garage. We're going to have merch, and we're going to be at least attempting to record some content for the show. So we will be there. We'll be there bright and early. And if you are attending, and we know there are a bunch of people already that have reached out, let us know they are attending. Find us and join us. Should be a fun time. I know you're looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's sort of our coming out party in person. And for those of you guys that are in the area, if there's something you guys want us to check out, we do have a list of panels and things like that we'll be trying to get into. So we'll be hopefully reporting on that when we're out of those, and you guys can catch up on that when you listen to the episode. I know there are going to be some folks from a variety of different podcasts and other sites that will be in attendance at Comic-Con, so we'll be looking to meet up with them. And we're gonna be there and in the mix, and it'll be a lot of fun giving out some merch and all that good stuff, but mostly it's just to meet new faces and people. So if you're there, link up with us, certainly direct message us on Twitter or send us an email.
Yeah. And also, we didn't announce, we forgot to announce at the beginning of the show, the winner of our solo contest.
Go for it.
So the winner of the solo contest is Rich Evangelista. Congratulations. Rich will be reaching out to you to let you know how you can redeem your copy of Solo.
Awesome. Congratulations, Rich. Thanks for being a listener. Thank you for leaving us a review, and we hope you enjoy the movie, because yeah. I am.
Because Aaron loves it.
I do.
Yes, and I will. I actually need to carve out some time to rewatch that. I'm actually looking forward to rewatching it at this point. So I just haven't had the opportunity to yet, but it's going to be coming up very soon. Maybe even this weekend.
Cool. We'll have to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. And, of course, you can join the conversation. We've had some really great conversations in the last couple of weeks over a number of different topics, and you can do that by tweeting the show at the Fanboy Garage. Of course, you could tweet me at RealCLMighty.
And you can tweet me at StartingSith.
And, of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com to access the latest episode, the episode archive, to buy some merch from our merch store, to shop on Amazon using our Amazon Associates link, or to send us an email if you're not on Twitter. You can just email us directly through the website. If you have a question, a comment, or if you want to enter one of our contests, you can always contact the show that way as well.
All right. So shall we close the door and get out of here?
We shall.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you next time.